You're listening to the Change Management Review Podcast, where we bring you the best tactics, strategies, and actionable insights for change through our powerful interviews with change management practitioners and leaders. And now here's your host, Teresa Moulton.
Welcome. My name is Teresa Moulton, and you're joining the Change Management Review Podcast. We have a very exciting guest for you today. We're talking with Filippo Passerini, and let me tell you a little bit about Filippo. Filippo Passerini's leadership as president of P&G's Global Business Services and CIO has been recognized as best in class in the industry. His strategies appear in numerous books, articles, and business reviews. He is currently a consultant to several companies and C-suite executives. He is co-author of Revolutionizing Business Operations, How to Build Dynamic Processes for Enduring Competitive Advantage. And we are very happy to have him with us. So welcome, Filippo.
Thank you very much, Teresa. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And the topic that you've chosen is amazing. The hidden dangers of focusing excessively on operational efficiency. It's exciting to me, having done some re-engineering back in the 90s. And so why don't we start off with, you know, what are some of the hidden dangers of focusing excessively on operational efficiency?
Well, it is a losing sight of the customer touch. And this could be internal to the company with the business partners in other areas or in other functions, or could be external, you know, even more importantly, with our clients, with our consumers. So efficiency is about reducing cost, which is, of course, you know, very, very important always. Is about increasing efficiency in the organization, making employees much more productive, much more. And there is absolutely, absolutely nothing wrong with that. We are submitting that this is necessary but not sufficient. And it is very, very possible to continue to be very, very efficient, but also be effective at the same time and innovative and continue to evolve our internal processes. So this is, in summary, you know, how we contrast and compare our efficiency to the bigger opportunity here.
Yes. And since you've left P&G, you've been doing some consulting, and your model that you've come up with has been consistent across different industries. Can you tell us a little bit about what you learned from that?
Yes, they absolutely, with pleasure. You know, first of all, we implemented that we had the opportunity to see this model in action in Procter & Gamble, and that's one of the reasons why probably Procter & Gamble in process operations was named best in class multiple times, not because of me, not because of necessarily of the people there who were, you know, wonderful, but all people are very, very good in all companies. The reason is that the model did work very, very well. So we experienced this model, implemented that, codified the model. And then when I left after 3 decades, Procter & Gamble, then for the last 8, 9 years, I've been doing a lot of advisory, a lot of consulting to several companies or, you know, C-suite leaders. And the model is completely applicable across industries, across sectors. It doesn't mind also the size of the company, because the model is truly, truly implementable.
That's great. What are some of the most important principles in the model that differentiate it from other operational models.
Absolutely. The overarching idea, Teresa, is to run internal business processes as a business, not as a necessary hell or as a as a commodity. So think of a process in finance or in supply chain or in marketing or in HR. One thing is to say, I need it to support commercial operations, to sell to customers. And different is to say, well, each one of these processes could be managed like a product, like a brand. So if you think of an accounts payable as an example, like a BMW car or a Tide detergent or an iPhone, then not only you have to operate efficiently, but you need to bring continuous innovation to the process, like you would do to any product. You need to think about how to engage with your clients, with your consumers. You need to think about what is relevant in the product, which for us would be a business process. And so it becomes very, very interesting because you have to think the whole, the complete picture of cost of operations. What is the right price? How do you constantly evolve and bring new news and innovation to the product? How do you engage with your prime prospects? So this is a completely different framework. So the overarching idea is you run a process, you run a back office in a way like a business. And this becomes a competitive advantage. This is not just trying to minimize the cost of doing what you are doing, but you make it a sustainable value for the business. So this is the overarching model. And then there are four stages of evolution in the model, in our specific model. And then the three key drivers that we believe, if implemented, will truly, truly move you from stage one to three and four.
Wow. That's really neat. I love the concept of thinking of a process as a process approach as a business. I'm an entrepreneur, so I love thinking of things as businesses. So tell me a little bit more about how your operational model incorporates the organization and the people into this shift.
Well, first and foremost, the three drivers, you will see there's organization component applying to each one of these three key drivers. The first one is an open marketplace. If you operate as a business, you cannot mandate, you cannot deploy top down. You have to create an attractive value proposition. And so if you apply open market in rules, it changes the mindset completely. You're constantly trying to generate value to articulate why the product, or in this case our process, should be adopted. Secondly, and so the organization here plays a key role because the organization is the one that will embrace, will adopt or otherwise. Secondly, the second driver is what we call unified accountability. This is not about, the top leader accountable, but it is accountability at every level so that you can run end to end, like for a product, a product, what you buy in a supermarket or in a store is end to end, and you buy a single unit of something. And so the idea here is the same. And in unified accountability, there is a lot of empowerment in the organization. So this is how the organization comes into a big play here. And the third is what we call dynamic operating model. And the model that is not static he's stagnant, but a
Mm
model that is able to constantly adjust to the
mhm.
changing business environment and changing business needs. And this is also for the organization. This is a completely different environment in which people can thrive and can really give their best.
That's neat. It sounds like you're taking the process approach and making it alive. It's like living almost, because you're opening up the market mindset and create letting the market dynamics just operate within the improvements of the processes. And I can see how that would really drive innovation and effectiveness.
Yeah. And this is not theoretical. This is not on paper because, again, we have implemented, we have been in action multiple times. We define ourselves practitioners, people who have done the work, and then we have qualified the model as a result of the work we have done, and not the other way around. It's not theoretical.
Right. And how do the people in the organization react to the change into this type of model?
This is what I found in change that works very, very well, and this I attribute these ideas to several mistakes I made early on in my career, to the point that a couple of times I thought my time with Procter and Gamble was over, but I learned a lot from those change management mistakes. And so the long story short is when I realized what is the message and how to truly engage with people. I don't know if this is a key a reason or just contributed, but as of that time, which is 20, 25 years ago, I have to say we didn't miss out one. And this is the idea. It is to totally articulate for people why change is good at the business level, why it is important for the business, why the business will benefit if we make this change. Secondly, why it is right for the organization. And thirdly, why it is right for you personally. For you personally, what do you gain? What's in it for you? And the reason for these three levels, Teresa, is that people want to do well for the business. People want to be professional, people want to contribute. And so they need to hear why it is right for the business. Now, oftentimes we stop there. And if we go the step further, which is why it is right for your organization, for us as an organization, people will truly latch on because we all want to belong to a winning team. So people feel that they, belong in a good organization. And thirdly, the third step I would strongly recommend is why Teresa, this is good for you. And that could be growth opportunities, that could be experiencing something new, that could be developing your skills, but I need to make an effort to explain to you what do you get from this change. And I again, I don't know if there is a strong correlation here or not, but ever since we applied very, very rigorously, this model changed for us went very, very well. And we have done things which were main case studies for the world, like integration of our acquisition of the Gillette company into Procter and Gamble that was integrated in a year and a half, such a large organization in 80 markets worldwide, 20,000 people. So this was quite remarkable.
Yes. And personally for you, what's it like to lead change in a model like this?
Well, it raises the bar. So it makes your life in a way a bit more demanding, but also the degree of satisfaction for the leader or for anyone success rate is significantly higher. So for me has been a great opportunity. I feel I was, fortunate to go through all this change. And we actually institutionalized change as a strategy so that we intentionally obsoleted our model every 2, 3 years, 4 years sometimes to reinvent it. And this deliberate obsolescence truly created a very positive attitude in the organization.
Yeah, that really intrigues me. And I'm wondering, how did you institutionalize or integrate change into your organization so it was just part of the fabric of your culture?
Yeah, this is the way we did it. We first of all, this was a reaction to an issue, as often happens in life, when we did a massive sourcing at some point. People felt a lot of instability, a lot of insecurity, a lot of uncertainty. Things went very, very well. But during the time we were finalizing this sourcing deal, of course, the organization has a lot of uncertainty. So people came to me often that, hoping, whispering that we went back to life as usual. And I said, well, we need to do something here because, and so I thought one way to overcome a fear of change is to set an expectation that it will happen regularly and consistently. And the deal was, Teresa, that if I said, if we don't like it, we will undo, we will change again.
Yes.
So do not worry, okay? Do not worry, because if we don't like it, if it doesn't work out, we will change again. So people didn't feel they were stuck in something
Right.
that they have to live with for the next 20 years, but they felt, everything was important, but then in the end, everything was a stepping stone rather than the final the end of the journey.
Yes, almost like an agility.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
getting the sense of this agility. I know agile is kind of an overused word, but in this case, it feels truly a sense of an agility, like they're actually kind of learning how to dance through the waves of change that, you're trying to be more flexible as an organization by using a model that has natural business drivers in it.
Very true, very true, very well said.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, one of the things I'm wondering also is, how do you measure progress along your transformation journey as you're leading this change? It's cultural. I mean, it's work-based, it's technology-based. When you
Now,
put
the only measure we use, this is a very, very good question. Teresa, the only measure we use is the business results and the business value. And, technology per se, I've been CIO, so I've been in technology, the better part of my life. But I always thought of technology as a means to an end.
Yes.
So technology per se is a commodity, or will soon become a commodity, unless we find a way to truly generate value in the business. I was also in line management in business myself, so that gave me the perspective of the business view of the world. And this is very, very healthy, because in the end, measuring in progress as an end state, it is very, very dangerous. So we need to measure business outcome, business results, business goals, and then technology change, transformation is a way to accomplish that.
Yes.
So this is the way we differentiate. The goals are always on the business. That could be velocity in the business. That could be shorter cycle time, and this could be whatever in supply chain, in finance, closing the books at the end of the month, faster, better accuracy. Number of different business goals in any process, in any areas. And then tracking in progress as a way to accomplish those. And technology is an enabler.
Yes. And so what I'm always curious about is how do you measure the intangible components of change, like culture change or adoption? Or, I mean, I think as change management professionals, we can get caught up in like, let's survey, let's survey, let's survey. And it's like,
Well,
okay.
we consider, I think the key word that you rightly used is adoption, because adoption is the pull rather than the push. And if you run as a business, you need to drive adoption.
Yes.
Fundamentally, market shares in the business is adoption, right?
Yes,
This is
yes.
the This is one of the critical business measures, your market shares, and this is how much clients, consumers adopt your product.
Right.
This is what it is. So adoption is very important. It's not soft. It's a very numerical, hard measure. When it comes to the culture, this is the way I think about it. The culture is the result of the way we behave. There is no culture conceptually per se. Culture in society, in countries, in ethnic populations, in companies, the culture is the result of our behaviors. And the behaviors change if we are rewarded to behave in a certain way.
Right.
So the Italians, for example, they are known not to be particularly disciplined because the reward is all about innovation, bringing new ideas. So
Ah.
the reward, and because we get rewarded for that, we behave like that. And because we behave like that, the culture is, what it is. So this is the way it works, and frankly, with this model, I found fairly, I wouldn't say easy, but very, very possible to change culture pretty fast.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, it's interesting to me to think about, how you reward people, obviously to motivate them to change. But, do you have any examples of some of the specific things that you did as part of the change journey to motivate people to actually change? And the reason I asked this question and further explain the question is because I think of there's two types of metrics. There's the realization metrics, which are like the business metrics, like market share, competitive advantage, ROI, that kind of stuff. And then there's these installation metrics around did we get the system in? Did we get the process efficiencies and all that? And so I'm wondering how do we or how did you get the folks in the business to really value the realization, the business outcomes, and get motivated towards those.
Well, let me share with you very, very quickly a story. You tell me if this helps or otherwise.
Okay.
When we integrated Gillette into Procter & Gamble, we declared public number that the synergy savings by integrating the two companies would be $1.2 billion per year. Now,
Okay.
$1.2 billion per year, it is $100 million per month, which is $3.5 million per day. So this is,
Right.
Teresa, this is material. So the question was, how do we accelerate? integration, because typically for mergers of this size, it would take by benchmarking historical data 3 to 4 years, 5 years.
Right.
So we said, how can we dramatically accelerate? How can we do it in half of the time? Of
Wow.
course, the teams were scared because if we fail, what happens? If we fail, we commit to something that we don't know whether we can do or not, and what happens if we don't succeed, that we will get a stain in our career.
Yes.
And so with the way we reframed was, every single day we accelerate will be $3 million. So
Wow.
don't worry about whether we'll do in half of the time, full time, one third of the time, every day. Focus on one day at a time, $3 million. If we do 15 days faster, is $15, $20 million. I mean, $50 million. If we do a month faster, is $100 million.
Yeah.
And so the reframing of what is success.
Yeah.
It is, I found, very, very important, because success is not putting a stake in the ground, I deliver by June 30, 2026. But it is about thinking, stay here and now, stay in the moment, and find
Yes.
every single opportunity to accelerate and to reduce cost. And in this way, again, long story short, as I said, we integrated in a year and a half, which became a case study for the world. We invented the new project management tools. And
Wow.
so, but it is amazing what the organization can do if we eliminate the fear to fail, the fear of unsuccessful.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. What was your message around failure? Were you about fail fast, or were you like you can't fail, or
Well, the
yeah.
message is, in a way, in this case, I'm not pretending it is true in every possible situation, but the reframing, it is true. But in this very case, it is impossible to fail, because if you establish a baseline, which is what should be normally expectable, and then you declare every day is worth $3 million, then you celebrate. Every day you do faster, so in a way
I get.
you cannot fail. You have to. It's only a matter of how many days times $3 million you do faster, and so simple mantras, simple messages, truly, truly create a cohesive force in the organization.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Really well said. I love that. And then of course I have to ask you this question because I'm asking a lot of people this question. But you just specifically, with your knowledge of technology and operational efficiency, how is artificial intelligence going to impact your model?
Yeah, I am a chess player, and not particularly good, but I've been playing chess for 30 plus years, maybe 40 years now. And you remember when the computer Big Blue played Karpov, the world champion, and
Right.
all the world was watching this game as the end of humanity, because if the computer beats, God forgive, the world champion, the human brain, it means it's completely useless. And actually, the computer Big Blue won. And by the way, the human brain is still important many years later. But the conclusion of the story, Teresa, is that what was found out is that the best player is not the computer alone or the human being alone, but is a combination of the two.
Yeah.
And when I play chess with a computer, with an application, and I ask the computer, to tell me what a move he'd move he would make. For me, is an incredible learning because I trust and compare what I would do with what a computer would do. Oftentimes, I don't understand why the computer does what it does, and that forces me to think about what are all the implications. So, I believe AI will play along these lines. I think is an incredible force, but it is in support to, and I'm using ChatGPT and other. Other generative AIs, and I have to say they're very, very powerful if you augment with your ability to ask to frame the right proposition. And when I give the model my quality thoughts, the response is much better than if I give the model random stuff. So my input is important.
That's really cool. That's really interesting. So all of us can relax, right? And just kind of take it as it comes. It might come fast.
Exactly. Well, this is true in life in general. There is not just an artificial intelligence.
Right.
It is a good wisdom for life, I guess.
Yes. And so if you were going to leave one message for our audience for this discussion or for what you want to get across to the world, what would that be?
I would say there is a higher risk not to move than to move, fundamentally. And there is a wise way to move, which, as you said, could be more agile, could be more flexible, doing pilots, but doesn't need to be a big bang in general that you throw, the world upside down. But I believe there is a higher risk in the do nothing than in doing something which has. And secondly, and to be clear here, I'm not commercializing or marketing anything, but I believe that having a model being supported in the model, accelerates probability, makes probability of success much, much higher.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So if our listeners want to get a hold of you and your book, how should they do that?
Yes, absolutely. That would be a pleasure to connect with the readers and hear feedback, because the book is actually doing well, but there is there is no limit to how much we can learn from one another. So if any of the readers of the book has any feedback, any thoughts, my co-author, Tony Soldan, and I would be delighted to hear their feedback, their thoughts, because at this point in life, our only desire is to do well and to do good.
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. So they can find you on LinkedIn. And do you have a website for the book?
Yes, we have a website, RBO. Dashbook, and but again, if you search online on revolutionizing business operations or through my name or through Tony Saldana's name, the book is there waiting for feedback.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time and your expertise and your intention, I think, is what comes out for me so much in this. I really appreciate you and
I,
what you're sharing.
Likewise, it's been an honor. It's been a very, very pleasant conversation, a very, very thoughtful. Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. It's a great program. Thank you very much for hosting me.
Oh, my pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Change Management Review Podcast. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.